And we are now live.
Welcome everyone to LTD Board of Directors work session. It's Wednesday, March 2nd. We're anticipating this meeting to be an hour and a half. So it's 5 o'clock. We should start by, or excuse me, we should end by 6:30. And I am now calling the meeting to order. So I'm gonna start with roll call and let's go with Pete Knox, please.
Here.
Thanks, Pete. Dawn Norden.
Here.
Thank you, Dawn. Emily Secord.
I'm here.
Thanks, Emily. Michelle Weber.
Here.
Thanks, Michelle. Gino Grimaldi.
Here.
Thanks. And Susan Cox.
I'm here.
Great. Nice to see you all. So I'm just going to start with comments from the board president. I just want to give a hearty thank you to everyone for coming to the board and city council work session on Monday night. So we get to see each other twice this week. But I thought that was a great discussion. I think there's a lot of great questions asked. And I know there's been a insurgence of community member feedback and emails you're receiving. And so I just want to thank everyone for the time they're putting into reading the emails, forwarding those as Andrew and Tom requested us do if it's about moving ahead. And just being involved in the process, I know it's a learning curve. We're not transportation planners and we're all learning a lot, doing the best that we can. So thanks for your time and your dedication to that. And speaking of that, as a reminder, in 2 weeks at our regular board meeting, there will be a vote for moving ahead. So if you're feeling unprepared or concerned or have additional questions or want some additional reassurance or want to know where some of our community partners are at, please reach out to Mark. I'm happy to field that as well. But just, I want you to feel like you're supported and we can get answers to your questions and that you feel really just prepared going into that board meeting. And I think that's really important that everyone here feels like they have kind of the background and the knowledge to feel confident in whatever decision happens. So with that, Mark, I'm going to turn it over to you. Do you have any comments for our meeting tonight?
I don't. I think you covered what I was thinking about saying. So I'll just support what you said and thank the board for their time and effort. We're coming into a busy time of the year for us. So I appreciate everybody's time.
And speaking of time, I know the lunch with Mark is full on Friday, which is great news. Love that board members are taking advantage of that time. And it happens mostly every Friday, unless there's some conflicts or Mark is out of town. So I encourage everyone to keep going. And thank you so much for taking the time to hang out with our awesome interim GM and enjoy some coffee and lunch with him. So with that, sorry, my cat is playing with that little door stopper thing. That's what you hear in the background. Let's go on to announcements and additions to the agenda. As of this time, we have no additions, but I'd love to hear if board members have any announcements. Okay, I do not see any. Okay, you guys are making it easy to roll through our meeting quickly. Thank you. So Mark, I'm not sure who's joining us from TransPro this evening, but I'm gonna turn it over to you for our first agenda item for the general manager recruitment process.
Camille will be bringing them over right now as we speak. So I will really just turn it over to Michael and Aaron, and they'll update you on what they've been doing with the GM search, where we're at. We'll talk a little bit about the process once we bring finalists in and kind of get some board input on, you know, we kind of put together a proposal, but certainly we want to make sure we hear from the board in terms of your expectations for outreach. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mike.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Madam Chair, directors, very nice to see you tonight. Thank you. We've got a little bit of information to share with you. Not looking for any decisions this evening, but would like a little bit of advice. So with that, I'll just jump in here. Aaron is going to help me with the technology part of this, and he's going to jump in whenever he sees fit, because he's been very much involved in this whole process all along. We keep each other updated closely. So Aaron, if I could have the content slide, just to put us in a place here where we're going to overview, do the project overview, just remind ourselves where we are, talk a little bit about the level of recruiting activity, which is quite encouraging, you'll see in a minute, and then have a short discussion about the interview process itself, touch on next steps, and then we'll be done. So I think we'll be easy on your schedule tonight. Aaron, next slide, please. So this is the roadmap that we use at every meeting. We've completed those first three boxes. We're now beginning to screen candidates. And sometime in the near future, probably about 30 days from now, we'll be submitting some names and resumes to you of 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 finalists. It depends on how people work through the initial screening and then the second interview that we'll conduct. So then the next stage will be to figure out what the interview process is at the board level, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But on the next slide, I'd like to update you on the, one more please, on the number of, the level of activity we've seen so far. So from Indeed, we've got 14 applicants. From LinkedIn, 30, that has lately been our best source, in terms of numbers, 3 off your website and 2 off the Transit Talent website. So what's that, 44, 49 candidates so far as of today. Not all of them high quality candidates, but it's very encouraging that there's that level of interest, sorry. So Chanel and I have, by the way, Chanel couldn't join us tonight, but she'll be with us the next meeting. Chanel and I have interviewed preliminarily 8 candidates that we judged from their resume and their application to be of interest. We've got 3 more scheduled tomorrow and Monday, I think. So we'll have 11 candidates that we will have put through this initial screen. This is a half an hour where we make sure they really get close to the kinds of things you're interested in. I would say, just in my own judgment, we've seen 2 really fine candidates so far and 2 maybes. So that's good. That's good. We're still working through these, but I'm encouraged that we're going to be able to offer you some pretty desirable candidates in a few weeks. So that's the current state of recruiting. As I say, these are just the initial screenings. Now we go back and have our second in-depth interview with those that we consider to be likely to gain your approval also. Any questions on that? I'm going to go to the interview process next, but any questions on the level of activity so far? Or any suggestions?
Michael, I just have a quick question. Is this pretty typical with what you're seeing, kind of on par with other organizations? Is this a higher level of interest or a higher number of qualified candidates?
That's a good question, Director Sicard. I would say it's a higher level of interest. We are seeing people who have been waiting, who are aware that this opportunity was coming up and have been watching for it. So I think we've got a higher level than some of the other ones I'm working on right now. So this is that also very encouraging. Other questions or comments? Okay, let's go on to the interview process itself. And here I'm looking for some discussion and some advice from you. So here's kind of a basic process, a really fundamental process. So that top box, this is Chanel and myself doing those initial interviews and then doing the second in-depth interview with the ones that shine in the first one and beginning the background checks and the reference checks and the social media checks. So that part we'll take care of. And then the second box, we will pass to you 1 to 3 candidates, or if there's a fourth one, that's great. Well, it'll be 4. We'll pass those to you. So that part's, and we think we do that by the end of March in time for your your session a month from now. So now the question is, so what will you do with them? And here's where I'm looking for your advice. My suggestion, and this is only a suggestion to get us started, is that you would interview all 1, 2, 3, or 4 that we've recommended and try to settle on one that's your preferred candidate. Now, we're not to a job offer yet, but just the one that you think most conforms to your expectations. And then we set up for that one candidate. Well, before I go on, so if it turns out that there are two candidates and you just can't decide between the two of them, then we would propose doing both sort of in parallel. But that's a little more complicated and could lead to, you know, camps who favor this one or that one. So if we can get to one, that's the best. So that one, then we would schedule for some meetings with employees. This would be my preference is for a very informal kind of meeting. You know, it may be in the driver's room or in some common area where everyone feels comfortable, and at a time when a lot of employees could easily access it, which probably means early afternoon when day runs are coming off and late runs haven't started, something like that, where people could just come in and mix kind of informally with the candidate. Maybe the candidate makes a little presentation. Here's who I am. Here's where I come from. What questions do you have for me? So that would be my recommendation for the employee session. Then lastly, we'd have a stakeholder session too. And I'm thinking of this as a little more formal, kind of a town hall meeting, or maybe a little like a public hearing where people register and they've got specific amount of time to answer a question and somebody kind of moderates the whole thing. But I make those suggestions really as a way to get us started. It's more important that this be a process that feels good to you than to me. So with that, I'd like to kind of open it up, questions or comments or suggestions.
I see Gino's hand up. Gino, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think there's any, you know, perfect way to do this.
Right.
But when I look at this process, it really differs from what's done here in the region. I'm thinking of right now, we're going through a recruitment process for Lane Community College. You know, they've announced 4 candidates and they're going to put the 4 candidates, the finalists, through a series of interviews, which is different from what you've proposed, where just one goes forward. So that's one comment. The other comment I have is what kind of information we'd collect, if any, from either the team session for employees or the stakeholders town hall meeting. So there's really kind of two prongs is, you know, do we, you know, move the finalists through the entire process that's outlined, or do we bring it down to a smaller number, and then what kind of information are we collecting from these steps?
Okay, thank you, Director Grimaldi. That's a good question, and that's really the kind of question I wanted to get to. We can certainly manage it either way. On the second part of your question, I think we would perform something like the same process we did with the initial the pre-screening meetings with stakeholders and employees, where we distill down the comments, provide a complete set, but give you sort of a summary of what we heard from employees and what we heard from stakeholders and others who commented. That's easy enough for us to do. So I guess the key question is, should we put several people into this process or just one? And I'm indifferent. We'll do whatever the board prefers.
Susan, I see your hand up, and that, Gino, it brings up an interesting point. Believe it or not, when Gino left the city of Springfield, they had 2 separate rounds, because it's hard to fill his shoes, but they had one round where they had 2 or 3 candidates, and folks came into this room and sat down, and the candidates answered these set questions plus a few questions off the cuff, and then were rated by all the stakeholders in the room. And then they even had a second round when they had to go back out for new candidates, and they had five candidates come to more of a informal kind of social hour type of thing where you got to meet them face to face, and they were kind of talking in these large groups, and you had sheets that you were rating. So it's familiar, as Gino mentioned, in our region to have high stakeholder engagement. So I just wanted to say it took them 8 people to find someone who would replace him. But Susan, let's go on to you.
I've been on the LCC search committee. So it has been an incredibly rigorous process. And I certainly think that having an opportunity to see the final candidates and, you know, to determine how many, but the review committee for LCC, one of the things I found incredibly helpful was everyone had to write a letter. The application process was the same for everyone. And you learned an awful lot about the person just in terms of how they responded, what their responses to various questions. And somehow it just seemed like provided equity in terms of people could do whatever they wanted to in terms of how they responded. Those were forwarded on then to the final candidates were then forwarded on to the board. My understanding is that over the weekend, they interviewed and came up with those 4 finalists that have now been presented to the community. And I think LCC certainly has, the community cares about and is going to be interested in the president of LCC. But I think they're also going to be interested in who is the new general manager of LTD. So for that same reason, we've had so many opportunities for public comment and interest that not to include a broader view prior to this is the final candidate, I think that would be missing a big opportunity to do that. So I would be in favor of a broader view, a broader net that more people can participate in.
Okay, I understood.
Emily, go ahead.
And thanks, Gino, for making the comments about more community involvement. I think you were the first one that mentioned that anyway. I guess I just wanted to reiterate that for the police, chief of police, we had a really vigorous community involvement, and the community actually had a panel that interviewed. And so, again, quite a bit of stakeholder engagement. I think that's going to be really key here as well. I do have a concern about efficiency as far as timing and sort of getting this, rolling, but I also want to be mindful of that, I think, really important engagement piece.
I think one of the things, can y'all hear me okay? One of the things we'll also want to keep being mindful is when we set that process, we want to make sure we can communicate that to our candidates so they know what to expect.
Yes.
We will have candidates that might be reluctant about it being known. So if, sometimes you can have a publicly available list of 4 or 5 and then lose 1 or 2, or right before it becomes public or after it becomes. So those things will be mindful of. But I think that, Mike, obviously hearing that, we can make a recommendation here that has a couple steps, maybe a community panel, not uncommon to see a candidate give a presentation to a board to share their thinking and vision give them a topic. It could be about the future of LTD. It could be about the future of mobility or whatever we really inspire them with. Just an observation there.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, by the way, we've made that point with all of the candidates that if they do go forward to a later step, that their identity will become public fairly early in the process. And so we've asked them all, if you're not okay with that, let us know now. And they're the ones we've talked to so far are quite okay with it.
Let's do Michelle and Pete.
So there's a bit of a theme and an expectation in our community. Having been involved in the search for our superintendent for Springfield Public Schools, I would echo that our community kind of expects us to engage them in these big decisions. I think each of these three processes or four processes is probably done just a little bit differently. So I think we need to define, you know, when the board interviews, when our community is involved, when the staff, you know, LTD employees are involved, and then how that maps out. I think we're hearing that community involvement is important, but, you know, how do we map that out?
Well, let me modify the process a little bit, make a proposal, if I may. So the meeting that you'll have a month from now, suppose we bring to you a number of candidates, whatever that number turns out to be. Let's say it's three for discussion purposes. And you look at the resumes and you decide, yes, we want to know more about this person, or no, we don't want to know it. And that's all you decide at that level. And then we also provide to you, we design a process that involves more community involvement. I've taken some notes on some of your suggestions, some specific questions, a presentation, and we recommend that to you next month. And those candidates that you want to see go forward, they then go into that process. We make some notes, we record that, we come back to you and say, here are the candidates and here are how they've performed in this the set of interactions with both stakeholders and employees. Does that come close to what you're looking for?
Any heads, nods, shakes, thumbs up, sideways, down? Oh, can't see my thumb.
And I can work with them as far as identifying, you know, people in the community who we would want the input from. And my initial thought is, you know, peers. So, you know, the city managers and county administrator and, you know, some other key people that they would be working closely with would be an important group. So.
Let's stay in order. We're still going to do Pete. And then Susan, is your hand up again, or is it just still?
Yes.
It's again. Okay. So let's do Pete, Susan, and then Gino.
Thanks a lot to Caitlin. I totally agree with what everybody has been saying. You know, we have this culture in the Northwest here that involving the community in really large decisions like this one is pretty much a must. And I would say that just kind of the only thing substantive that I can really add, I think, is that you know, Mark's got a good idea of talking to peers, but I also think there should be some way to bring in some important community groups that might be would have an interest, and I'm sure we could work to figure out who that would be. But I know that all takes time, but if we can, you know, and but the important community groups is a priority.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And, okay. You know, my thought is, you know, we have kind of an open forum where community members, passengers, you know, people who use our services can come in and talk to the candidates and you know, give some input, so.
Pete, did you have more? Are you all done?
I'm done.
Okay. Susan and Gino.
I guess one of the things that I found really useful about the LCC process, and you know, it's so fresh, I guess is why I'm bringing it up. The representation of the committee itself was the first piece. And there were faculty, there were staff, there were students, there was the union, there were different community representatives, board members, foundation board members. So there was a broad range of people who were a part of that selection process from the beginning. And then their recommendations actually then went to the board. Now there were board members that were a part of it. And one of the things that provided was anonymity for the candidates. There were a number of them that really were very concerned. You know, we didn't know anybody's name. You could sort of guess a little bit about where they were from just based on their experience and their title. But having the broader input first, rather than having the board do the narrowing down and then getting input from the community, I wonder if it's possible to reverse that a bit, or is it, I mean, I know that we want to have a process that moves, you know, quickly, but I also think this is too important to go speeding through it. If it takes a little longer, I think we need to let that process take place.
Mike, feel free to respond to Susan if you'd like.
Okay. Yeah, we can certainly accommodate that. And in fact, the whole point of this discussion was to get your advice on what you would feel comfortable about in reaching this important decision. So this is valuable, and we can, once we finish with all the comment, we'll put together a process. We'll work with Mark, and we'll propose it to you along the lines of what we're hearing right now.
That sounds great. Thanks, Mike. I'm glad we're all feeling excited about engaging stakeholders more, all singing kind of a similar tune here, wanting to get a lot of stakeholder engagement and just really create that community buy-in. So it's not necessarily a board decision, it's a community decision. Gino, go ahead.
Yeah, two comments. One is somewhat related to Susan's comments. I want to make sure we don't do a process that takes out a candidate that we may be interested in, because once a community or group says, no, we don't want to look at a person, it's going to be awkward to move somebody back in. So maybe you can finesse that. The real thing I want to talk about a little more is the session with the employees. I think we need to be purposeful in that interaction. I mean, for example, what I'm looking for to hear from the employees when they're looking at these candidates is not to rate their resume or anything like that, but I'd like to hear from the employees as to whether or not they can connect with this person and this person can communicate with mm-hmm. them. So handle those soft skills. And if you could come up with a process where we could get that input from the employees and any other input that you think is important from the employees, that would be helpful.
That's a great point, Director Grimaldi. One of the things that I would be looking for in the interaction with the employees is how the candidate handles it also. You know, I would expect a little bit of challenge and maybe a little bit of friction, because that's the way workplaces are. And I'd like to see how the candidate handles that. Is he or she comfortable in that environment? Can they be direct? Can they be sensitive? Are they listening? You know, it's actually a very telling kind of interaction, I think.
And employees will do their homework as soon as the name of a candidate comes out. Yeah. So they will know as much about that candidate as any of us will. So that's always an interesting process.
That's a good word for it, interesting.
Susan, go ahead.
I guess one of the things that I felt was helpful in the LCC process, the people who were representing the union, the employees, the staff, they were selected, my understanding is, representing people, the employees determined who they wanted to be serving on this committee. So that created certainly, you know, from my perspective, confidence that they were going to be able to represent what they believed was what the rest of the employees and staff would want to be looking at. There was also incredible amount of confidentiality. I mean, we had to sign statements that were like unbelievable. We were not allowed to download the resumes. We couldn't print them out. So anyone who would be determined to be a part of it would really commit to protecting the identity of the candidates and moving forward pretty seriously with it. So I would think that the employees would have the capacity to determine who they felt represented their perspective. That doesn't mean that there wouldn't be a larger opportunity for the candidates to speak to the employees, but I'm thinking more earlier on in the selection process.
So how big of a group are you thinking for that initial screening process, Susan? I don't know how many LCC had.
The LCC process, I want to say, I believe there were about 20 people. And I'm happy to just forward that there was a very specific timeline and guidance and how they were going to go through the process and ultimately how it concluded. I'm happy to forward that on.
I would like to see that.
Yeah, it'd be worth looking at for sure. 20 seems pretty large for interview process, but.
Well, this wasn't the interview process. We didn't interview any of them. The board did the interview. This was the process by where narrowed it down to who recommended the final candidates to be. That went to the board, and then the board then narrowed it down further, and they're the ones who interviewed. Interviewed nobody.
So it was a screening. Okay, got it. That makes more sense.
Yeah. It was a surprise to read it in the paper because we didn't have any idea who was going to come.
Mark, was there any talk with maybe Lucy or anyone else? Mayor Lucy, I know she had reached out to me about the fire chief hiring process. Or excuse me, was it the fire chief process?
No, it was a police chief. And yeah, we've looked at it. We've got all that information.
Was that helpful at all? Or is there anything there that we would want to mirror?
Yeah, I mean, there's some things. And even the stuff we did up front was, you know, kind of part of what they did. And so, you know, it just depends how much, where we think we're going to get the most value in putting resources and time, you know, and that's why we're kind of, you know, here tonight, really hearing what the board thinks and the processes that they feel have been successful or helpful. And so we'll put something together for sure after this. So.
So Michelle and Gino have their hands up. In about 2 minutes, we are supposed to switch over to our next agenda topic. So Michelle and Gino, go ahead. And then if anyone else has final thoughts, we're just getting to the point we need to move on in our agenda.
So I think there are several different ways to approach this. In the school board process, we had an application that we sent out to community members and they had to apply and then go through a process to be accepted. So I think you could, you know, based on their responses and how they contribute in the community and how that interacts, you know, you could go down that road and determine what a good number is to bring into that initial process. And they were rated on every candidate was rated on the same things, the same questions, that type of thing. So that when that came to the board, we kind of knew what those, what the feedback was from our community. And that helped us in that screening process, just as an example.
Gino, go ahead.
Sure. I think our process has been good. We went through that, we used that tool way back in the goal setting session to come up with a profile and the characteristics. And I think that tool and all these stakeholder interviews that the consultants did, did a great job in coming up with the profile and the characteristics of the candidates. So I think I'm comfortable with the having Transpro come up with the final, not the final, but propose, four or whatever candidates to us, and then we screen it down. Had we not gone through that work, I may be more likely to go through more of an LCC type process where you involve a lot of people in the screening. But I think we've done that work and just in a different fashion.
Any other additional thoughts that we have, Aaron and Mike here, as they go back and process all of our feedback?
Timing. I just want to make sure we're thinking about the initial interview, finalizing our process and communicating it, and then executing on that process. And maybe you're just going to segue right to it.
Well, I think based on the advice that we've gotten tonight, we'll bring you a more detailed process and some candidates a month from now, and then we'll use the month of April to consult with employees and stakeholders and others as we, as you determine in our next meeting.
Okay.
Okay, well, I think we've already got the questions. So thank you very much. Your advice is invaluable. Very much appreciated.
Well, thanks for being here this evening and being receptive to the feedback and asking good questions. And for the process, of course, we really appreciate all the work that's gone in so far. And it's so encouraging to hear that we have a just a great pool of candidates. That's so awesome. So thanks for sharing that news with us.
Absolutely.
And thanks for being here. Whatever time it is, wherever you are, we always appreciate you staying up late for us.
Most welcome.
All right. Bye. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
All right. We are going to move on to our next agenda item. So welcome, John. We haven't seen you for a little while. So nice to see you. So John is going to be talking to us about the Ride Source Operations Overview. It's all yours, John.
Glad to be back. Thanks. So hello to board members and everyone joining us today. The purpose of this presentation is preparation for what will eventually culminate as a new contract for RideSource services. So this is a normal process that happens periodically as LTD puts services out for public bidding through a request for proposals. However, we haven't made significant changes to the contract for RideSource since 2017, and we're due to start talking about a refreshed contract. So LTD determined that the nature of the services at RideSource have sufficiently changed that a new contract is going to be required. These changes are what is known as CCO 2.0 throughout Oregon. In Lane County, this refers to the expansion of Medicaid services to include a second coordinated care organization, with Pacific Source joining Trillium. This also incorporates sweeping regulatory changes and reporting requirements, which we've needed to quickly adapt to. This has included a recent amendment with our current contractor, and major technology upgrades we're in the process of implementing. However, while the request for proposals for a new contract will mean a bit more work for staff, the intention of RideSource is to make things simple and easy for anyone wanting to schedule a trip, and we're not anticipating any noticeable problems for our riders throughout this process and look to make any contract transitions seamless. As you hear me talk about RideSource today, it's no surprise that you'll find that we're perfectly aligned with LTD's strategic plan and our mission, vision, and values. RideSource directly fulfills LTD's mission of getting people where they need to go, and particularly embodies LTD's vision in creating a connected, equitable community by supporting older adults and people with disabilities with their transportation needs. You'll be hearing me speak at length today about the collaborative community partnerships we create through RideSource, likely more than in any other community you'll find. We're investing in the latest technology innovations through system upgrades and mobile data terminals that help us be more efficient and effective. Respect and integrity are embedded in the fabric of every trip offered through RideSource, and we closely measure our performance on these metrics. Safety remains paramount at RideSource, and at no time has that been more important than throughout the pandemic, as we supported community members with trips to testing and vaccination sites and provided transportation for known or presumed COVID positive community members to receive care. RideSource is an umbrella call center housing many different transportation services, but the anchors that constitute the majority of the work are ADA paratransit and NEMT. I'm planning to do an overview of these services in general, and I'll leave plenty of time at the end for any questions that you may have. Our intention is to have the board well-informed and well-prepared throughout the upcoming contract update. You're already very familiar with our 40-foot articulated 60-foot fleet of fixed route vehicles, and I'm sure you've seen our fleet of RideSource vehicles driving around town. We own these vehicles and we lease them to a contractor and pay for their preventive maintenance. This allows RideSource to be a turnkey operation, meaning a contractor can come in to operate the service and we don't need to wait for them to scale up or purchase equipment. LTD owns the call center at 2nd and Garfield next to one of the Safe Sleep sites. We own the vehicles, the phones, and the technology infrastructure. Our contractor is then responsible for answering calls, for transportation requests, dispatching, and finally picking someone up and dropping them off. The majority of our internal fleet are cutaway vehicles, meaning a second stage manufacturer completes the vehicle to our specifications after they come out of the factory. Currently, the majority of our vehicles are 25-foot Eldorado Aerotechs built on a Ford E450 chassis. We began upgrading our newer vehicles from 800-pound to 1,000-pound lifts to better accommodate the variety and weight of mobility devices we've been seeing in our community. We're also testing some new suspension upgrades to make for a smoother ride, as an area of feedback we sometimes receive about our fleet is that it can be a bit of a rough ride. RideSource also maintains contracts with an external fleet of vehicles. Primarily, these are taxi sedans, but this also includes minivans, secure and medical transportation vehicles, and ambulances. These are all owned through private providers. RideSource currently doesn't have any relationships with transport network companies such as Uber and Lyft. However, we do have the ability to utilize trains, planes, and TNCs when we have a need, and RideSource does sometimes need to travel outside of Lane County. Eligibility for RideSource is quite simply for anyone who can't ride the fixed route bus to get where they need to go due to a disability. This includes if someone is unable to get to or wait at a bus stop. ADA paratransit service is a federal requirement, and it's also the right thing to do to provide transportation options and increase the independence of people with disabilities. LTD has a strong history of serving our disability community, which includes doing so prior to the existence of the ADA. Our requirement is to serve anyone within 3/4 mile from a fixed route bus in the metropolitan area. This boundary doesn't include inner city transportation. And while our paratransit boundary isn't an exact overlap of the city limits, to keep things simple, it's easiest to think of it as generally covering any residents throughout Eugene and Springfield. We provide origin to destination service, which generally means we pick someone up curbside at their home and drop them off curbside at their destination. However, the whole point of RideSource is that we can serve people who may not be able to travel to the nearest bus stop or maybe even to the curb. So when needed, we'll also assist someone right from their door and assist them right to the door of their destination. We provide the level of service needed to get the job done. As such, paratransit is a bit more expensive to operate and we charge a higher fare accordingly, at $3.50 a trip, and personal care attendants can join the ride for free. Many riders use both fixed route buses and RideSource, depending on their needs on that day or for that trip. And while we work hard every day to make our fixed route buses as accessible as possible, it remains critical for services like RideSource to exist, as some transportation needs just can't be met on our fixed route service. These trips are generally performed on our internal fleet of vehicles. This is a shared ride service, so we try to be efficient by picking up multiple passengers along the way. We consider these trips to be on time if they're within 15 minutes of the scheduled pickup time. One key difference from fixed route service is that our dispatchers can communicate directly with riders if there's any schedule changes. RideSource also offers ADA paratransit service in the city of Florence, complementary to LTD's Rodeo Express fixed route service offered there. All of these trips are routed through the same call center. and the same phone number, making things simple and easy for riders needing to schedule trips. A large portion of the trips offered through RideSource are through non-emergent medical transportation, which you'll also hear me call either NEMT or Medicaid trips. LTD serves as the Medicaid transportation brokerage in Lane County. These are trips for people in Lane County on the Oregon Health Plan for eligible trips with a medical purpose. Common examples would be someone going to a doctor's appointment or to the pharmacy to pick up a prescription or for dialysis treatment. Our local coordinated care organizations in Lane County for the Oregon Health Plan are Trillium, and now added since 2020 is Pacific Source. For any Medicaid members who aren't working directly with Trillium or Pacific Source, we work directly with the Oregon Health Authority. We also work closely with Oregon's Department of Human Services and our local senior and disability services to provide a limited number of non-medical trips for clients. These trips are generally performed on our external fleet of vehicles using the least cost, most appropriate transportation option available. That means if somebody can fit in a taxi sedan, that's probably what we're going to send. If somebody using a mobility device needs to be picked up in an accessible minivan, that's what they're going to get. And if someone needs a team of people to transport them in a stretcher vehicle, we do that too. Some notable features of Medicaid transportation is that we serve all of Lane County and sometimes beyond. So if someone in Deadwood needs to see a specialist at OHSU, we do that trip. Also noteworthy is that these trips serve a medical purpose and are provided at no cost to the rider. We then receive reimbursement for the trips through a complex Medicaid billing process. What makes RideSource unique and special in our community is that if someone needs to try to schedule their Medicaid transportation, they'll call the same phone number as when they need to schedule an ADA trip. We take all the guesswork and hassle out of transportation, and we work out all the details for them. So if someone's going to Walmart to pick up groceries, we'll get that scheduled for them, but maybe they're going to go there to pick up a prescription, and we can offer the ride free of charge. We also offer people alternatives to taxis for their medical trips. People can drive themselves or have someone they know drive them, and we'll provide gas mileage reimbursement. We also offer bus passes for people able to ride the bus to their medical appointments and have at least 3 eligible medical trips per month. For medical trips that require overnight stays, we also cover food and lodging expenses, which get billed through Medicaid. RideSource offers many more transportation services besides just ADA paratransit and Medicaid transportation. And I can't emphasize enough how incredibly convenient it is to have one phone number for someone to have access to it all. We partner with Whitebird Clinic to provide behavioral health transportation. We partner with Pearl Buck Center to provide preschool transportation. We partner with Alternative Work Concepts to provide travel training. We partner with Senior and Disability Services to provide eligibility assessments. We partner with the state of Oregon to provide work trips for people with developmental disabilities. It's a lot of partnerships, but these relationships are critical because we can do more together than we ever could individually. That's what makes RideSource special. And the hard work building and maintaining an interconnected network of governments, nonprofits, and transportation providers gets us national attention for what we're able to accomplish here in Lane County. We could probably do a better job of being outwardly proud of LTD's first-class RideSource operations, and I'll look to board members to help support us with that. I could spend an entire presentation talking about each of these additional programs, but for today, I wanted to communicate that RideSource is an intricate network of services that builds on our community's strengths to provide something special here in Lane County, and that people choose to move here because of the availability of outstanding services like RideSource. I've mentioned you'll expect me to come back before you later this year with a contract requiring board approval. Our current contract expires at the end of August, and we're shortly planning to post a solicitation for bids on a new contract. I also want to make note that we're separately going to be soliciting bids for a consultant to perform a RideSource operations analysis, similar to the comprehensive operations analysis you're familiar with for the fixed route fleet. You'll hear more about that operations analysis later, and you'll be seeing me a few more times in the near future. For now, I wanted to stay focused on the RideSource operations as they currently exist and our upcoming procurement contract. With that, I want to hold space for any comments or questions that the board may have.
I see Pete's hand up, but John, go ahead and call in, folks.
I guess we'll go. Thanks for your presentation. That was absolutely excellent. And I just want to tell you that I do talk to members of our community about these services and what they do, because I there was a time I actually used Right Source after my spinal cord injury, and it was very valuable, but I didn't know about a lot of these other services that were involved. And I talked to people who, you know, are taxpayers, and they go, "Oh, I'm glad my tax dollars are actually going to something like this." And I actually have talked to people who you have used, like the non-emergency medical, right? I have a friend who got hit by a car in the crosswalk a couple of years ago, and she's still more or less recovering. And she has used the service, and she's like, "Yeah, this was a lifesaver for me." And so I agree that we really do need to let the community know that this is something we do, and this is part of how we connect our communities together. So thank you very much.
Gino, go ahead.
I just want to say thank you for your work. I can hear the enthusiasm in your voice and your presentation, and you should be enthusiastic. You're making a big difference in the lives of so many people. So thank you.
Any other comments or questions for John? Well, John, thanks for being here this evening. We look forward to when you do come back. Thanks for all the work that you're doing, and as others said, for the great presentation. So we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Of course. It's a pleasure to be here. I'll look forward to coming back.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. And I'll just add that I just appreciate the work and the passion John has for the work that he does. And he and Cassette have built a great team, and they've put all they have into providing that service, which is so important to the community. So I really appreciate your work and the effort. And, you know, and you will see as the contracts come up, these are not economical services to provide. They're very expensive, but the difference they make is just amazing. So well worth it.
Well said, Mark. Thank you. All right, John, we will see you again soon. Thank you again.
Thanks to everyone.
All right, we are going to move on to our second to last agenda item for the evening. So we're going to be talking about the construction manager, general contractor, contracting method, operations command center, and Eugene Station modernization projects. So I see Todd is here, and Sarah and Jake. Oh, and Cosette. So we got a full house. Well, welcome everyone. We're so excited to hear from you this evening, and the floor is yours.
Okay, well, hello board members and everyone. My name's Todd Smith. I'm a project manager in facilities. I've been here about 5 months now, and very excited to be part of the LTD team connecting our community, and also partnering with Sarah and the procurement department on this presentation, introducing the construction manager, general contractor, CMGC project delivery method. Some of you may be already familiar with this method, and it may be new to others. So tonight we are providing an introduction because we will be recommending the use of this method to the board in the form of written findings in April. The findings will describe in detail the reasoning behind the required criteria, why CMGC is the best suited method for two of our upcoming projects that are in the adopted community investment plan. The projects are the Operation Command Center and the Eugene Station modernization. Both of these projects are funded from the CARES Act. At this point, I will turn it over to Sarah.
Hi, everyone. I am Sarah Brightman, and I serve as LTD's procurement contract officer. And the other part of the team on the procurement side for these contracts. And just to share a little bit more about how they connect and work with LTD, in reflection of LTD's mission, vision, and values, we are here to share about these exciting projects and the alternative contracting method that we've determined the best route for LTD's needs and to be determined as we go through the process and present information to the board. You could say we're on a mission, especially in commitment to the vision. We want to prepare all who will take a part in one way or another, that being LTD employees, neighbors, partners, and the board, on how the projects and the processes are integral to the work along the way, but also to the quality and end result of the construction itself. In reflection of the values, each project that we are proposing this process for is highly collaborative and particularly drives innovation and safety.
Thank you, Sarah. I will go over the agenda. So we're going to do an introduction, and then we're going to talk about project delivery methods and what is CMGC. We'll do a process comparison of the project delivery methods. We'll look at the early involvement by a contractor in those concepts, also the procurement and contracting events that happen. We'll do an overview of the two projects, and then we'll do a summary of the key benefits of CMGC to these projects. We'll also go over some provisions and decisions, and then we'll be able to respond to questions. With that, I'll turn it over to Sarah.
Thank you. Okay. So the subject projects, which Todd mentioned, Operation Command Center and Eugene Station Modernization, and the work and method that we're looking at is that construction manager, general contractor title, which you saw. And it's an integrated approach to planning, design, and construction. And to get here and where we're at right now, kind of at that 50,000 foot view, it starts with all of that early planning and financial strategy and identifying projects. So then they become projects. And then today we're at the delivery method phase. And that is what ultimately drives us into procurement method, contracting type, and finally materializing construction. And with that, Todd is going to go into a little bit more about the work of CMGC.
Okay, thank you, Sarah. So what is a project delivery method? Well, the beginning of most work sets the stage for successful outcomes, and that also applies to capital construction projects. One of the most important decisions that affects the outcome of a project is usually how to structure it. The structure of how a project team will work together is set by the project delivery method selected by an owner. In most delivery systems, there's a minimum of three parties. That's the owner, the designer, and the contractor. This delivery method establishes when these parties become engaged. It influences the choices of contractual relationships. And it also influences ownership and impact of changes and modifications of project costs. So what is CMGC? Okay, well, CMGC is an integrated team approach to the planning, design, and construction of many projects. In the CMGC process, the project owner hires a contractor early to provide feedback during the design phase before the start of construction. It's an alternative contracting method to the traditional design, bid, build. And a project team consists of those three components. It's the owner on a project, which in our case is LTD. The design consultants would be your architects or engineers. And then the general contractor. In the CMGC process, the owner has a two-part contract, and the first phase of that contract is the construction management, which is the CM part of the project during the design. And then the second phase is the general contracting, and that's the GC part where the CMGC would construct the project. So then we wanted to take a look at this process comparison of the two project delivery systems. And first, we're going to take a look at the traditional method, also known as design, bid, build, or some people call it low bid, which is the default method for public projects. LTD has recently performed several projects with this design, bid, build method, such as the MX LED lighting upgrades, and more recently, the approved by the board, the Glenwood and Ridesource bus wash replacement projects. In this method, the A&E consultant is selected and the owner goes through design with the A&E until the construction documents are completed. Then the owner bids the construction documents to the contractors and the owner selects the lowest bid, a responsive bidder, to build the project. In the design bid build process, the project is designed without contractor input and then bid by contractors where they have a short time to get familiar with the project, submit a bid, and then the project is awarded to the lowest responsive bidder. Then they construct the project. So that's the design bid build method. The next method we're looking at here is the alternative contracting method, which is CMGC. It's often used on transit projects and some past LTD projects, such as the fleet building remodel and expansion, and the West Eugene bus rapid transit construction. The first step of this process is the programming and planning phase. We are currently in this phase of our two projects, which evaluates project and delivery methods. Then if a CMGC method has been identified as the best suited delivery method, written findings are developed. And the A&E selection process happens simultaneously. So when the findings are approved, we would then move into contractor selection. This is the main difference between CMGC and design bid build. This is where we select a contractor early on and collaborate with them during the design phase with their design professionals and then throughout design. Then the CMG is competitively bids the project to subcontractors and then we would go into what's considered a guaranteed maximum price would be established and then move into construction. One of the key benefits here is we do reduce our overall time of a project as well as we have a lot of collaboration and what ends up happening there is, you know, there's some cost savings because of that reduction of time. So early contractor involvement, this is a critical component for us, and that's it creates a collaborative team approach to projects, which allows us as the owner to be an active participant during the design process and make informed decisions based on, you know, contractor expertise. That also fosters innovation, and the collaborative process encourages both the contractor and us as the owner to look at options, including using innovative techniques or approaches that reduce time and cost. It also improves design quality. The contractor is able to review the design and provide feedback, answer designer questions, and provide change options. By including the contractor reviews, the design can produce better designs. You know, the designer can produce better designs, which reduces issues in construction and prevents change orders. Reduce risk. The contractor's feedback during this design phase can reduce project costs because the owner is able to understand and mitigate risk, which are identified early on in project development. Any risk mitigation savings identified during the design phase are savings to the owner in the CMGC arrangement. This also, there's also improved cost control. Value engineering is a natural part of the CMGC during the design process. This allows a contractor input during the design to the owner. So us as the owner can obtain reliable cost data for any design alternatives being considered. This allows the owner to consider the budget and make more informed decisions about which alternative offers the greatest cost benefit. Another key component is the optimization of the construction schedule. The CMGC process allows a contractor to begin planning the construction schedule during the design phase. This way, the team can view how the construction will impact the traffic operations of a building, and adjustments to the construction schedule can happen accordingly. The CMGC also enables the team to explore existing facility conditions and long lead procurement item issues that may be on the critical path during the design phase. And it gives a greater focus to those that affect the overall schedule.
Thanks, Todd. All right, so what does that mean for moving forward in those steps? Well, each procurement and contracting step does have purposeful and prescribed alignment from our public provisions and requirements. At a high level, these activities line up along that cycle with the delivery method activities that Todd shared. And so in taking a look at how the approval actions align with that and what that means for our activities together, each bar of activity has BOD notation, and that's for the board of directors. And that layer of this activity approval actions along the timeline are where we would seek approvals. The CMGC process really kicks off with this initial step of those written findings that Todd mentioned. And what we go through is a process called findings approval. And that is bringing those draft findings along to pave the way to move forward with the process. And really almost simultaneously or directly following, you'll see that we move into that A&E process. And this has a very typical qualified RFP contract for selecting that A&E firm. And that's the second party to the team. And then while we have that partner working, design developing that contractor piece for qualified construction contractor is out. And it also has a very similar RFP and award process approval step. And at that time, that allows the third party to the team to build towards the ultimate goal, which is the GMP or guaranteed maximum price amendment to the contract. This is a little bit different because it's like a second step for the CMGC contract rather than all in one. But the purpose of that, as Todd described, is to allow for all of the bidding packages to happen, which is done as a competitive bid phase by the CMGC with owner and A&E oversight. So always kind of in team collaboration. This price portion goes through thorough review and any negotiations. And when all is set, we come for that final approval action to add that cost amendment. So we'll see each other a little bit more than the usual process. Of course, the unique and beginning and ending events along the way, but two typical RFP award contracts in between. And with that, I'll let Todd share some details and more about what the excitement is for each area.
Okay, so the two projects that we're talking about are the Operation Command Center and the Eugene Station Modernization. which are both a good fit for the CMGC project delivery method. We are in the early planning process and have been meeting regularly with the operations department, including representation from the ATU for input on the projects. This process will continue throughout the design phase. Both of these projects are in the community investment plan that was adopted and approved by the board in December of 2021. And both of these projects are in alignment with the five areas of focus in the strategic business plan. And they are both also funded out of the CARES Act. A little more detail about the Operation Command Center project. That's a remodel and addition to the Operation Department in the Glenwood Administration Building. This project will update the operations area at the Glenwood headquarters to include modern operation dispatch, operator report area, training and simulator classrooms, restrooms, showers, and operator rest areas. These updates will improve the safety, security, accessibility, customer service, employee engagement, and our financial position by reducing training costs, streamlining everyday operations, and increasing employee development, training, and morale. The estimated construction budget for this project is $6.8 million, and the preliminary schedule has us starting in July of 2022 this year, and construction completing in February of 2024. The second project is the Eugene Station modernization. This project will improve both the buildings and exterior features of the station, enhancing both customer and employee experience and updating the station for better operations well into the future. Examples of possible improvements that we're exploring are the updating of wayfinding signage, real-time signage, installing energy efficiency lighting and fixtures, updating the public restrooms, looking at different strategies for that, upgrades and repairs to the building, structures, walkways, parking, and bus bays. The estimated construction budget for this project is $3 million. And like the Operation Command Center, it would start in July of 22. Also, it would finish a bit earlier than the Operation Command Center because of the size, and it's we have it scheduled for September 2023 completion. So I just want to go over a few of the key benefits that CMGC would provide on these projects and what we would gain from it. So the constructability reviews and inputs from a contractor on these complex technical and logistical projects, which also include significant sustainable targets and goals that we have on our two projects. So that constructability, you know, looking at that ahead of time really helps us. The collaborative design process is a team-oriented approach to the project, and it allows multiple perspectives to participate in solution-based process during the design. The continual awareness of the current market values, competitive bid packages, all in an open book process. Familiarity of LTD buildings and site investigations, which would identify existing conditions, long lead time items, and also identifying the phasing and sequencing to minimize disruption in normal operations as we would do this during operating time. So the contractor also becomes a partner to achieve the goal of the owner. And all of this results in a cost and time savings to us as LTD, as the owner. Now, the CMGC method is a good option for transportation projects where the qualified and qualification and cooperation of a contractor are critical to the success of the project. At this point, I'll turn it over to Sarah.
Thanks, Todd. Definitely, that's my favorite part, I think, about CMGC is the overall strengthened process and teamwork of having the three parts working together. So those factors are many of the required considerations of the written findings an agency's project team uses in deciding to seek approval of the alternative contracting process for CMGC, and also what the local contract review board will see when using to determine to approve or require some further information. So our provisions are that, of course, our esteemed board here is our local contract review board, and the CMGC process is an alternative contracting method and does require an official exemption in Oregon. And we follow the process steps per ORS 279C and OER 137. And then our local contract review board follows their parts for written finding, review, and approval, or otherwise determining for more information. With that, Todd and I, thank you for giving us your time today. We know that CMGC is a lot bigger than obviously all the details that we tried to cram in. And any slides or questions that you'd like to look back on, we're happy to do that.
Any questions? Let's see, we have Emily, Pete, and then Gino.
I just wanted to say thank you so much. Whenever we get a presentation like John's and like yours tonight, Todd and Sarah, I just feel so grateful for all of the expertise that goes on behind the scenes. And I really appreciate this refresher on this process, because when it comes before the contract review committee, this is going to, I think, set us up for a lot of success. So thanks so much for your help tonight and just helping us understand the process and the benefits of it. So thanks for your time. Oh, and sorry, A&E, is that architect and engineer?
Yes, that is.
Thank you.
Pete, and then Gino.
Thanks a lot, guys, for coming in tonight and explaining this to us. I think this looks really straightforward. My experience with project management was in the software industry, which is, and I don't really have a lot of experience in the so-called real world. But I think this looks really straightforward. Yeah, I know it seems like that is a very different thing, but it's actually makes sense in my experience, having all the players involved when you're creating your project is actually more conducive to getting a better project out there and less time and less money. So I'm impressed, and I can't wait to see these projects happen.
Gino, go ahead.
First of all, thank you for the great explanation of the process. I'm totally in favor of using this process. I've got a real detailed question for you. How many square feet is the Operation Command Center?
Currently, the Operation Command Center occupies, the entire operations department, because it affects the entire operation department, is about 6,500 square feet. However, there is some square footage where there's the wellness center and some, there's the admin kitchen space could be affected and most likely will be to create better connections.
Great, thank you.
And just to expand on that, Gino, one of the things that we're excited about is kind of retooling our break area, which will allow employee engagement, not just for operations folks, but for the whole district to hopefully have admin folks kind of mingle with frontline employees at the same time in the same area.
Great, thanks.
Any other questions or comments? I see a no from Don. Nothing from Michelle and Susan. Well, thank you. I'll echo Emily. Thanks for a great presentation and all the work that you guys are doing. And Todd, I know you've only been here 5 months, but it sure seems like a lot longer because you are very knowledgeable and we're so excited to have you on the team. So, and Sarah, thank you so much for being here this evening and for the great presentation. We just really, really, really appreciate all the work that you guys are doing. So please, I hope that appreciation comes across from this entire board. I think we're probably done with this presentation. We hope to see you in real life eventually at some point, but thank you so much for taking the time to be here this evening and share with us about the work that's being done.
Thank you too, I appreciate it.
See you soon.
Okay, so we are 5 minutes ahead, go us. So our final agenda item, as a reminder, this is kind of new to the board of directors. In the work session, we wanna always make sure that everyone's feeling an opportunity to talk about if they have particular items that they feel need to be on the agenda. So as a reminder, we're always gonna have this option to talk about if any one of the directors wants to see any future information any information for a future meeting or any action items. So I will turn it over to you guys and see if there's anything that you have on your mind or you wanted to talk about for future board meetings.
I just wanted to remind everybody that we're doing a ad hoc review of bylaws and standing policies. So if there's any feedback, we really would love to get that in advance. I believe we're meeting Monday. So just a heads up, if you have a few minutes that you could spend on that, we'd love any feedback that you might have.
I actually had a question about that too. I did watch your last meeting and my question was, I don't know if this is permissible. So Mark, you might want to jump in here, but is there any way to have a president or a past president review the changes? And I say that because there's a lot of changes coming down the pipeline. And for those who haven't been in the position before, it might be nice to just get some extra perspective. I'm thinking of like a Gary Wildish or someone who has such great depth of experience. Maybe he would be willing to review them. But once again, I don't know if that's allowed.
Yeah, I mean, we could. I mean, we actually simplified them quite a bit and you know, we'll turn them over to Andrea to take a look at prior to, you know, finalizing them. So, I mean, it's up to you guys if you want other eyes on it. I'm sure that we can find a former board member to do that.
Say, didn't we recently have a letter from some former participants and chairs that might be especially interested in that process? That could be a good opportunity to kind of connect those dots.
Caitlin, I think that's a great idea. I think that the more wise perspective and experience and on this, the better.
Okay. Thanks. Let me know how I can help with that. I guess I was just thinking there's been so many situations where you don't expect or the president's had to do something kind of unexpected or right away. I'd love to hear from Mary, maybe Jerry or Gary on that. But let me know how I can facilitate that, or Mark, if that's something you want to help with or.
Yeah. You guys can certainly direct me to whoever you would like me to get them to, and I will do that.
Thank okay. you.
I mean, I would think Gary Wildish would be a great person, but I'm super open to if others have ideas.
Okay, well, we can talk about that at the meeting and kind of narrow it down. One other thing too, just while we're here and have a couple minutes, is something to start thinking about is when we might want to start meeting again in person. A lot of public boards are going like an April, May timeframe to start meeting in person again. So it's just something I want you to think about. It's really up to your comfort level. I think we'll always have a virtual option for public input and for people who are out of town that can still participate. So, but anyway, just something to start thinking about. Maybe we'll put that on the agenda for the next work session.
That'd be great. Just as a reminder to our new board members, in the past, we had talked about keeping work sessions hybrid since we don't have public testimony. just to make things a little more low barrier. So you're not traveling every other week to LTD and taking kind of the time. So that was something we talked about. So that might be something we want to revisit. If it, as that, as an option, work sessions, hybrid, regular meetings in person. Thanks for bringing that up, Mark. I'm sure we're starting to feel like we all have hope that we can actually venture out and see each other. So, all right. And so any other thoughts from board members for, once again, action items or discussion items they'd like to see on future agendas? Okay, well, this isn't your only opportunity, of course. We just want to make sure there's lots of opportunity. So if anything comes up, of course, please let us know. But with that, thanks for being here this evening. Once again, we have our regular board meeting March 16th. And anything we can do to help people feel prepared, please let us know. But thanks for being here. And this meeting is officially adjourned. Have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.